Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It's hour two. We're absolutely loaded. The Big Ten's back. Joel Klatt joins me in about 5 minutes. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on Fox Sports Radio, and we're on FS1. Joy Taylor is here. The Miami Heat win their opener against the Celtics. That's going to be a 6 or 7 gamer. The Clippers get doused. They gag. I hate using choke, but that's what it looked like to me. And LeBron and the well-rested Lakers are waiting for the Denver Nuggets. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. We do have to give the Nuggets credit, though.
Yeah,
because,
of course.
I mean, obviously, we were going to focus on how badly the Clippers melted down.
Right.
And I don't disagree with Nick. It's an all-time historic meltdown.
It's bad. But it is also the second round. Now we get to the conference finals. You see fewer and fewer upsets in the conference finals and the finals. It's a nice second-round win for the Nuggets. But the story today is the Clippers. And I want to address this. It was not a great night for load management. It was not. Listen, players have always missed games. They've always missed games. And I have defended load management. People miss games. It wasn't called anything. Now, this is where the media is wrong. There's a lot of people in the media. The NBA gets the most favorable pandering. And I don't know why it is, but it just does. Load management's not good for the league. The NBA is a star-driven league. You can't have your stars taking off 15 games. It's not good, period. If Tom Brady was taking every other Sunday off, it'd piss people off. I mean, when you go, as a kid, when I went to watch baseball games, they would put on the Nolan Ryan pitching tonight. Like, you go watch the Dodgers, and Daryl Strawberry was a Dodger, or Keith Hernandez is a Met. Listen, we got middle-class families in America that can pay for one game a year for their kids. You can't have Harden and Giannis and Kawhi taking it off. It's lousy for fans. And the NBA, more than any league, is a star-driven league. So when I was a kid and I went and watched the Sonics and I got one game a year, my parents were divorced. I didn't have a lot of money. I wanted to see downtown Freddie Brown and I wanted to see Gus Williams. If they're not there, it ruins the experience. And I know it's not about me. I get it. But it's not good for the league, especially a star-driven league. That's why I defend James Harden a lot. James Harden plays his butt off, and he plays every night. And Russell Westbrook plays every night, and they don't take games off. And LeBron mostly plays every night, and he doesn't take a lot of games off. I like that. I like that. That's good. It's good for regular Americans who take their kids to one game a year. It was a bad night for load management because – the reality with this, Doc Rivers has a reputation. He's the Joe Torre of the NBA. He's very good with veteran players. He doesn't drive them at practice. The problem being the chemistry was formed in San Antonio before Kawhi got there, and it was formed in Toronto before Kawhi got there. This team had to form chemistry this year. And Doc Rivers needed to be tougher. He needed to say, Lou Williams, you can't leave the bubble for a strip club. And Kawhi Leonard, you can't take a darn day off in October. We got to get this chemistry thing right. And was Doc a little too lenient? And that's his DNA. He's kind of he is very much about take care of the veteran players. Was he a little too lenient on this and he didn't create a chemistry? I think that's a very fair criticism. Lou Williams, a guy I respect who's been around this league a long time, said it last night.
We did have championship expectations. We had the talent to do it. I don't think we had the chemistry to do it in this show. You know, we had lapses on defense and on offense where, you know, I think guys have played in systems where they were expecting guys to be in certain spots offensively. A lot of different guys made adjustments. And so, you know, it showed.
I think that's fair. And I respect Lou Williams. Nick Wright was on this. The chemistry was not good. Maybe this team for 1 year, Doc wasn't an ideal fit. Now, next year, I'm going to guess they play the starters more. Steve Ballmer's going to be like, play. But the load management thing, this idea that chemistry doesn't matter. Did you watch Denver last night? Have you watched Miami? Miami's winning because of chemistry. That's why they're winning. By the way, Philadelphia's got more talent. Their chemistry stinks. The Clippers have a deeper roster than Denver. Their chemistry's not good. So in a weird way, it was good for the NBA. Adam Silver doesn't like load management. Networks hate it. Your broadcast partners hate it. For the record, LeBron's always understood the business of the NBA. He plays. He plays. It matters. And load management, it's just not good for the league. I get players missing games. I think they should pull the schedule back. I think NBA travel stinks. You're showing up in Cleveland off a bumpy winter flight at 2 in the morning, getting in a crappy van, going to a get 5 hours of sleep, shoot around. It's terrible. Cut it down. But just the idea that you can take 12 games off and it's all, you know, good. It's not. Clippers chemistry stinks. It's why they lost, probably. Joel Klatt now joining me. Big Ten football is back via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So the Klattster, listen, usually you and I are just, I mean, we're cats and dogs living together, but I think we're both happy for this morning. So you just tell me, the Big Ten's playing. Why? What broke through? Why?
Well, they got more comfortable with the medical breakthroughs. You know, I think that you said it best. A lot of us maybe fairly criticized the fact that they just totally punted on the season rather than just continuing to hit the snooze button, right? So for my estimation, you set an alarm, which is a date to try to play football, and then you hit the snooze button, and you hit the snooze button, and you hit the snooze button. And the Big Ten kind of punted right at the beginning, and in large part due to the medical information. They weren't comfortable with their testing protocols. They weren't comfortable with the information on myocarditis, and they got that information, okay? So now they have what they have always sought after, which is the information on myocarditis and a testing partner where they can test every single day. What does that actually do for you? I hear a lot of people say, well, now they can test. Yeah, everybody can test. But when you can test every day and have results in 15 minutes, here's what it does for you. It means that if you're on the field for practice or a game, you're negative. So the contact tracing doesn't decimate your team when the positive tests come up inevitably, like yeah, they will, because it's a college campus, because you know that if they were on the field, they tested negative. So you're catching it much earlier, and the contact tracing doesn't decimate your roster like we've seen in some of these other areas of college football.
So, you know, I said if we end up with Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, and, you know, Oklahoma or something, and who, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get there. The schedules are all different. Yeah. Do you think the Big Ten could be at a disadvantage now? Because, you know, they start later, or the SEC's only got a 10-game schedule. Is it harder for the committee? Is it going to be just one of those seasons where we watch it, but we can't take it seriously?
Well, I think that we're going to have to take it seriously. And I think that every game is going to mean a little bit more, Colin, to be honest with you, because I think that the committee is going to be watching intently how you play regardless of your competition. I think it's a really fascinating exercise to talk about what the committee is actually going to do and what the actual protocol is going to be for the committee. Are they going to set a minimum number of games? That remains to be seen from Bill Hancock, the director of the CFP. And it should be noted, Colin, I think this is maybe the most unique part. You think you and I argue a lot, right? And we do. And mostly I'm right and you're wrong, which is fine. But can you imagine right now we have a playoff that is owned and operated by the conferences and the athletic director at Notre Dame? Okay, so there's Schwarbrook. He's sitting there. And then you've got the ACC, you've got the SEC, you got the Big 12. And all of them are sitting there thinking to themselves, we just took the arrows in the chest for pushing forward, for staying consistent with our plans to play, in particular when the Big Ten punted on their season, and that made it very difficult on us. Now, monetarily, it doesn't matter if the Big Ten is included or not. They're going to get the same amount of money from ESPN for the college football playoff. And I don't want to make this all about money, but I am trying to tell you that behind closed doors, this is going to get very partisan and very nasty as to whether the Big Ten's even going to be allowed to compete in the playoff or not. In particular, when it comes to the minimum number of games, they might say that you have to play 7 games. And then all of a sudden you get into a bumpy road type of scenario that you talked about earlier in the Big Ten schedule. And what if Ohio State doesn't play the 7 games? I think that it's going to be very fascinating. I don't know who's at an advantage and who's at a disadvantage, but I do know this. If the Big Ten is allowed to compete in the playoff, it's going to come down to one statement that you and I have hated for a long time, and that's this. They're going to take the 4 best teams, and it has hurt the Big Ten at times, and now in this season, it might work to their advantage. That arbitrary statement of 4 best teams, if they think Ohio State's one of the 4 best, they would put them in there.
You know, one of the things I said earlier, the media too often goes into panic instead of perspective. Sure. I don't know how this is going to work. I don't, and I'm not going to pretend I do. But I will say this. Here's the one thing I'm absolutely certain about. There are young 21-year-olds in America who grew up in poor families who play college football. Mm-hmm. And because they're going to play, they're going to get drafted. And they're going to change the arc of their families in their lives. And I don't want to be overly dramatic.
But you're right.
Joe Burrow may not get drafted if last year isn't. So the Pac-12, let me ask you this. Is the Pac-12, will they recover from not playing? In 5 years, no. Will this matter?
No. They were already way behind the eight ball. Colin, you and I both knew it, right? And just competitively, from a recruiting perspective, this is going to put them back light years. You know, it's going to be the power four moving forward, to be quite honest with you, because this is going to be used against them in recruiting. You already have seen Alabama and Clemson dip into California and get some of the best quarterbacks in the country. Bryce Young, we might see him at Alabama. He comes from Southern California. That's supposed to be a USC quarterback all day long, and he's going to be suited up for the Crimson Tide. So you've already seen that change in recruiting. Now this is going to be used against them like you can't believe. And I think it's going to set them back light years as it relates to competitiveness moving forward within college football. And it should be noted, it's not necessarily their fault. Everyone wants to just blame Larry Scott and the Pac-12. In the Pac-12, it's very different than the Big Ten's decision. The Big Ten's decision was a conference decision. And the Pac-12, they're dealing with municipalities and governments.
Yeah, California. You know,
That's exactly right, where these schools can't even go practice, even if they were allowed to from their conference. So it's a very different set of rules, and that's why you've seen a very intelligent, smart, great player, Amon-Ra St. Brown, the wide receiver, wrote that letter, and he didn't write it to Larry Scott. Who did he write it to, Colin?
Governor.
He wrote it to the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, because it's much more of a political animal out here in the West Coast than it is there in the Midwest with the Big Ten.
Yeah, California tends to think their way is always the right way, and there's a lot of different ways to attack COVID. We saw UFC run an island, NBA's got a bubble, NFL's got a highly regulated non-bubble. I'm crossing my fingers on this stuff. So, Klatt, I watched a little college football last weekend. Clemson looked really good to me. I have them as the best team I've seen so far. Klatt's top 10 is Clemson, Bama, Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Auburn, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. The Big 12 was garbage last week.
Hold on. You just said earlier, timeout. You just said earlier that it's not the media's job to panic, right? It's to provide perspective. So while you panic, Mr. Media Member, let me sit here and give you some perspective about conference strength. We know three things about last weekend in the Big 12. The first thing I'm going to tell you is that Louisiana and Arkansas State are actually really good programs. Okay, and they could go in and beat any Power 5 team on any given week, in particular with a guy like Jay Adams at wide receiver for Arkansas State. He's an NFL caliber wide receiver. Kansas State was down 5 offensive linemen from the year before trying to replace their defensive tackles. This stuff happens. And Kansas, it's Kansas. Like, who cares? Illinois, Vandy, those teams lose, and we don't blame it on the SEC. The second point is we rate the strength of a conference based on what you are at the top, not what you are in the middle, all right? Every single year we see games like this, right? It was just last year that Tennessee lost to a group of five team. Florida State lost to a group of five team. Illinois lost. Missouri lost. Colorado lost. Arizona lost. Oregon State lost. It happens, Colin, and we don't rate the entire conference based on that. So these things happen, and the one thing I do know, and this is the last point about the Big 12, Oklahoma and Texas looked really good. I don't care what competition you put out there. They looked like they were the real deal, in part because both of their quarterbacks looked amazing. Spencer Rattler, absolutely phenomenal debut for Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's good.
And Sam Ellinger is really good at Texas. So if you're going to rate the conference based at what you are at the top, the Big 12 is going to be just fine. And the evidence I need for that is the ACC, which has been garbage for years, but we don't talk about it. Why, Colin? Because Clemson is at the top. So there's your perspective. Please don't panic. Provide a little perspective, which I've just done for you right there.
All right. I got nothing else. That's pretty good. You know what? Let's keep our argument civil today. It should be a day of celebration. I get Buckeye football and Penn State football, and I'm happy. I don't know how it's going to turn out. There could be cancellations and postponements. I'm not an expert. But today, I won't, you know, hammer you that I was like virtually perfect another week of predictions. And there's no reason to go there today. Let's be friends.
Last year, I came on before a Big Ten championship game, and I had not shaved. And look at you. Here you are, adopting the look.
Listen, some people age and end up looking like George Clooney. I just happen to be one of them. I mean, that's just...
The common man, Colin Cowherd, everybody.
All right, Klatt. We got football in the Big Ten, Klatt. Good seeing you.
You're the best. You're the best. Excited.
All right, good stuff. Coming up next, don't try to be cool if you're not, or analytic if you're not. Mike McCarthy of the Cowboys, I'm talking to you. That's coming up.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday on Fox, Dak and Zeke lead the Cowboys in their home opener against Matt Ryan and the Falcons. Or you may see Jimmy G and the 49ers as they take on the Jets. All the NFL action kicks off at 1 Eastern. Check local listings for the game in your area.
Let me tell you,
or watch it on the Fox Sports app.
Washington, Arizona is very interesting. Washington may have the best defensive front in the league. And Kyler Murray, if you don't watch him, I watch all of his games. I watch his practices, his film study. The kid is just crazy. He runs more than Russell Wilson. So there's some good game. And Brady, by the way, is going to pick up his first W. That's an underrated game. The Herd brought to you by LegalZoom.com today. Get things done. Starting a business, protecting your family, LegalZoom.com. All right, the worst thing you can do when you age is try to act young. You want to age gracefully, right? You don't want to wear skinny jeans when you're 60 because as a guy, you've got no butt and it looks ridiculous. You don't want to wear a too tight shirt when you're 60. It's okay to age gracefully. Wear a pair of Dockers, collared shirt. It's all good. I mean, there's a lot of advantages to being, 65 years old. You got a little money finally. You moved out from your parents' house. You got control of your life. You got grandkids. The dogs still love you. You don't want to try to pretend you're young. I don't want to overreact to this, but Mike McCarthy got booted in Green Bay, and, the word was he was a little old school football. Is he now wearing a medium T-shirt? Because I'm listening to him after the game, and he's trying to change his brand and show everybody how much he loves analytics. Remember the Peter King article about a year ago? Let me read this. The Peter King article where he started dropping all this analytical stuff, and you're like, bruh, you're wearing a medium T-shirt. You're old. Get over it. He said on the Peter King article, there was a flow chart for his proposed 14-person football technology department. The top analytics lieutenants will be coordinators of database management, a coordinator of football analytics, a coordinator of mathematical innovation. Oh, good hell. Anyway, that was the Peter King article. It was clear he was trying to change his brand. I'm not outdated. I'm not Jurassic. After the Rams game, he dropped a couple of these this week, and it sounds like he's trying too hard to sound like Mr. Analytical.
We have a grading index that we put a lot of time into, and so we're closer than you may think we are.
I've never heard Belichick talk about a grading index. Okay, here's the second one, though.
When you look at the third down breakdowns just by the down and distant categories based on where the Rams were and where we were as far as the attempts, they outperformed us in efficiency of normal D&D.
D&D? Okay, I'm not trying to overreact. There's another gem. Here it is.
The thing I'm most impressed with is, the fact that we came out in our first live action and won the turnover ratio.
Turnover battle is what everybody in the history of the world called it. I don't know. Maybe I'm overreacting, but Sean McVay is creative and is multiple and has variable schemes and motions. You watched the game Sunday night. You and I both watched it, right? It wasn't like Sean McVay was doing clever stuff. This is his offense. It's all misdirection. That is Sean McVay's offense. It's multiple. It's variable. It's massive motions. It's stuff that you don't see a lot of our teams do. That's Matt Nagy in Chicago. That's Kyle Shanahan. Like, when you watch the Rams, this is not trying to be clever. This is Sean McVay and the Rams' offensive DNA. Everything's got a wiggle. Everything's got a different look. Everything's misdirection. That is not Mike McCarthy. And I understand him wanting to change his brand and be a little more current, But I'm not trying to be mean here, but doesn't it sound like he's trying a little too hard to sound current? Turnover ratio, D&D. Talking to Peter King about his analytics and coordinator of mathematical innovations. I don't know. Sometimes you just got to grow a beard. There'll be a little gray in there, and you just, you know what? My dogs like me. My TV works. It's okay. By the way, Ron Rivera is old school. Ron Rivera is old school. He lost his job. He had four suitors within a day. Mike McCarthy lost his, sat in the basement for a year. Maybe it's just, if it's not natural, it's not who you are. Ron Rivera's old school. Did you watch that game Sunday? Did you see their second half? You don't have to be a tech wizard. You don't have to be Silicon Valley tech smart to be able to motivate young alpha males. But this feels like a little too desperate for me. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Got to be very careful with those skinny jeans, Colin.
Didn't that feel a little desperate?
And
by the way,
what?
That may be how you talk when you're not in front of a microphone. But when you're in front of a microphone to the media and the public, you don't use those terms.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're media dorks, so we're not breaking down film and looking at analytics and turnover ratio.
Every high school football coach watching me is like, it's the game.
So you guys don't know.
You guys don't know. I mean, I'm coaching at the junior varsity level over here. I know the game. That's not how anybody talks football.
So Kevin Stefanski said he wants Odell Beckham to have more targets despite getting him a game-high 10 on Sunday. But Baker Mayfield says he's not going to force it to his top receiver.
I think it has to come naturally. You know, obviously, you game plan and you scheme up things to get the balls in your playmaker's hands. But then when it comes to game time, they're going to give us certain looks that might take that away. They might show you a different thing and you got to react and play and just move on. It's got to come naturally.
We'll see.
How long does something take to come naturally?
17 games.
If it comes naturally, it generally happens quickly. If it takes work, it's not actually coming naturally.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean everything happens fast. There are relationships that take a little while.
Yeah, but that's the opposite of coming naturally.
Right. 17 games now, and it's still bad. Like three catches, 25 yards. That's just not. This is Odell Beckham Jr.
22 yards.
Oh, my
giving them extra yards.
My bad.
It's three receptions on 10 targets, 22 yards. Jarvis Landry had five receptions on six targets, 61 yards.
And by the way, if he comes out and has 12 catches, then the question is, are you now trying too hard to make it? Like, this should be a natural eight catches, 88 yards every Sunday. This is a 7-8 catch relationship if you have the right quarterback receiver conduct.
I just feel like we've been talking about this situation and when it's going to work since it started.
Yeah.
And I don't put this on Odell. And I really don't even put it on Baker because I'm not putting 90% of this Browns circumstance on Baker. Yes, Baker played a role, but he did walk into a completely historical, dysfunctional situation.
That's fair.
He's had three head coaches.
Fair.
Like, this is not all on Baker. That's three different systems. There's a lot of turnover and change. It'd be a lot for anyone to deal with, especially a personality like Baker Mayfield. I just don't think... Look, I'll be honest. Selfishly, I want Odell out of Cleveland. There, I said it. Odell's a superstar. He needs to be in a place where he can be a superstar.
No, I agree. I think there's a role. Listen.
And it's not working.
We said this from the very beginning. He never said he wanted to be in Cleveland. He wanted to be in New England, and he lives. He has a beautiful house in L.A. I've had friends run into him. My friend's dog left his yard. This is a true story. My friend's dog got loose in his yard. He went over the fence, and Odell Beckham was like, hey, is this your dog? Odell's here. He loves L.A. He loves New York. He goes to Paris. Cleveland was never a natural fit. That's not a knock on Cleveland.
No,
it's just,
not.
This was never a natural, I want to be there. He wanted out of New York, and he wanted into Tom Brady or into L.A.
And I don't necessarily think, I'm with you, the grass isn't always greener. You got to be careful what you wish for, whatever cliche you want to put on it.
Right.
But I understand him wanting out of New York. I do. But you're right. When you don't have control
on
where you're going,
be very careful.
You
got
to be careful what you're asking for in that situation. So was New York the best place for him? Maybe. You could argue no. I mean, he's who's dealing with Eli, and now there's a lot of turnover, and New York looks like they're in a complete rebuild. So maybe not. It's not that I'm bashing Cleveland. It just doesn't work. So at this point, I just want Odell to go somewhere where he can thrive.
By the way, and you got to rip the Band-Aid off because it'll get worse. What if they beat Cincinnati, lose the next two, they're 1-3. Now the league knows you're desperate, and the league's not going to give you anything.
Exactly. You're not going to have any leverage.
Yeah, so if you beat Cincinnati and Odell has 9 catches, make the move. You got leverage. It all good. You're not desperate. But you go 1-4, and everybody in the league's like, you're a mess. You have to get rid of him. You have no leverage.
Man, this game tomorrow night.
Big. House party, Def Jam, my place.
So Cam Newton got 15 carries for a game-high 75 rushing yards on Sunday, but Cam isn't worried about how the heavy workload will affect him going forward.
The toll on the runner is not the same as the running back, so to speak. I think quarterbacks all alike has this, you know, invisible rule to be able to get down in the open field rather than finish the run as other positions would like to do.
I think I missed this victoriously sore feeling, but other than that, good to go.
I'm sure Cam feels great, and he is right. Running as a quarterback is completely different than running as a running back. You're not breaking tackles. You're not getting tackled at the end of the play. You're sliding. You're getting out of bounds. You're avoiding contact.
It is harder for, you know, Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson are baseball players who slide. Cam 6'6". Big Ben 6'6". It's always been harder for the big athlete.
Did you watch Ben trying to get down the other night?
Bad. Listen, Aaron Rodgers is 6'2". He's not good at it.
It's not,
he
not
rolls.
Fluid. Yeah, it's
he
not,
looks terrible.
It's not fluid. But 15 carries is too much. I understand Cam feels great right now, and I loved what I saw from their offense, and it was great that he still has that in his, you know, toolbox and that they're taking advantage of it. But his MVP season, he averaged 8.25 carries per game. Other quarterbacks in week one, he had 15 carries, led the league with 75 yards. Josh Allen had 14, 57 yards, and Kyler Murray had 13 carries for 91 yards. That's just too much for Cam. Josh Allen and Kyler Murray are much younger than Cam.
Yeah.
They have not had the injury history that he does. And when he last played all 16 games, was in 2017, he had 8.7 carries per game. So 15 is a lot more than that.
And also, like, Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson move, but they've also got elite receiving components, so you can't put an extra guy in the box. You have to double DeAndre Hopkins. With Cam not having a deep threat, there's one more defender in the box that's a heat-seeking missile to get Cam. Like, you can't. Kyler Murray's got one big advantage. You have to roll coverage over on DeAndre Hopkins, or he'll be a nightmare. That's one safety just out of the box. You don't get that with this offense.
Yeah.
There's no deep threat.
So finally, the NBA announced their all-rookie first team for the 2019-2020 season. Rookie of the Year, Ja Morant, obviously made the list. He was also the only unanimous selection. He's joined by Kendrick Nunn, Brandon Clark, Zion Williamson, and Eric Pascal. So pretty strong there. Obviously, we expected Zion to make the
Kendrick Nunn
all-rookie first team.
Pat Riley knows his talent.
Tyler Hero made the all-rookie second team.
Yep.
And it was on the floor at the end of the game last night. So the Heat have two rookies who are shining. And obviously, Ja Morant had an incredible season. Ja Morant really, I like his personality, how he's handled everything and being Rookie of the Year.
Kobe White's a fun player to watch. Have you watched Kobe White at all? I watched about four games, the Bulls this year. Kobe White's a very interesting player. I don't know how good he'll be, but it's funny that he made it. Because out of the draft, I'm not sure what I was going to get from him. He's an interesting player for the Bulls.
I really feel like, when we were just talking about this earlier, the NBA, it's not quite there with the changing of the guard, the way that it felt with the NFL and the quarterbacks last year. But we're really starting to see the young players emerge and come into their own and their personalities and their style and the teams that they're with and the chemistry, the Celtics and the Heat, Nuggets. Like, this is a bright future for the NBA.
I agree. Joy Taylor with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Okay, Drew Brees is going to drop by. Friends of Tommy Brady. Drew Bledsoe. What did I say, Drew Brees? Drew Bledsoe stopping by. Couple of the old quarterbacks looked okay. Tom struggled. I don't think Tom was as bad as everybody says. I think week one is tough, and I'm going to talk to Drew Bledsoe sort of about, you know, where you're at in the season. Take me to what guys are thinking now. If you had a really bad opening week, there's a difference between the Jets bad and Tom Brady struggling. Those feel like two different stories to me. All right, Drew Bledsoe around the corner.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
CarShield.com. Check engine light comes on. Don't freak out. It's a warranty after yours ends. Save up to 10%. CarShield.com. Code Herd. One of my favorite guys. He, owner of the Doubleback Winery, by the way, just had one of his cabs the other night. It's absolutely unbelievable. I'm a member of his club, Doubleback Winery. But you know him. 14 NFL seasons. My buddy Drew Bledsoe is joining us. He's up in Montana right now. Look at Drew Bledsoe in Montana. Good God, that is idyllic.
If I'm going to be here, I might as well try to look like I'm in the mountains. You know, come up here and put on a tie or anything. You know?
That's right. So I'm not a huge fan of calling out my quarterback publicly. It just doesn't sit well with me. That's why they created doors and offices. What did you make of Bruce Arians calling out Brady pretty harshly?
You know, I think there's a strategy there. You know, I don't think he's just calling him out just to call him out. I think, you know, when you bring in somebody as iconic as Tom Brady to your team and he has a tough game, if you sugarcoat it, you shield it, that sends the wrong message to the locker room that he is now somehow above everybody else just because of what he's done in the past. And so, you know, I don't think that, that Bruce Arians will make a habit of doing that. And hopefully he doesn't have the opportunity to do it anymore. But I think that there was a method behind that, and that was just to send a message to the locker room that that everybody's accountable.
Listen, every year there's a really good team, and they just fold. It doesn't work, and it's often injury riddled. We saw Seattle last year had cluster injuries to the running backs. Philadelphia cluster injuries to their perimeter players. And I'm looking at Jimmy G in San Francisco. They've run out of wide receivers. Everybody's hurt or out. And Jimmy G was not good, and Kyle Shanahan was not happy with him. And everybody's clobbering the quarterback because we all think Kyle's a genius, and we all have questions with Garoppolo. But I'm watching him, and I'm like, well, of course he's struggling. Everybody's out. Did you ever have a moment in your career where you just like, guys get hurt, same position, and you're just limited, and your game just deteriorates?
Yeah, you know, and it's really, really hard as a quarterback. So, you know, you talk about, quarterback being accurate. You know, I remember a few years ago, two, three years ago, there was some talk about Aaron Rodgers. All of a sudden, his accuracy was off and his completion percentage was down. Well, you can only be accurate if you know exactly where you're throwing the ball. I mean, you give me a target, or you give, you know, Jimmy G a target and he knows the receiver is going to be there at that particular time. You know, you can do that and you can be accurate. But if you're not entirely sure where that guy is going to be because you're not familiar with that particular guy and how he moves and how he runs, or maybe he's not consistent in his route running, it's almost impossible to be accurate if you don't know exactly where the guy's going to be. And so, having a cluster of injuries like that, it makes it very, very difficult on a quarterback, because in order to function efficiently, you got to know exactly where guys are going to be at exactly what time they're going to be there. If they don't get healthy, and particularly if George Kittle's going to be hurt here for a little bit, it makes it really, really difficult as a quarterback.
Yeah, Brandon Ayuk, the rookie's out. Debo Samuel out. Jalen Hurd out for the year. Tavon Austin hurt. George Kittle limping. Sorry, folks. It's just not easy for, especially in the NFL, the game is just faster, quicker. Guys are moving. To Drew's point, it disrupts everything. So go back to your rookie start. I thought Joe Burrow was mostly really good. I really liked him a lot. What did you make of it, and what was your first start like? I mean, you would think he would be nervous.
Well, my first start was at Buffalo when they were just coming off. I think it was their third Super Bowl. So I'm standing there playing catch, and I see Bruce Smith come down the tunnel, and then you see Cornelius Bennett come down the tunnel. And you talk about nervous, man. I almost wanted to walk off the field, man. These guys were terrifying. But I finally settled in and played a little football. And the thing that I liked watching Joe Burrow was just how comfortable he looked playing, right? He did not look like the game was moving too fast for him. It didn't seem like he was out of sorts, or uncomfortable with the speed of the game. I really thought that he looked really good in his first start. And I think the future is really, really bright for the kid. Love everything about him.
You know, we've talked about this. Drew Bledsoe joining us, 14 NFL seasons, drafted number one overall by the Patriots, played Parcells, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick. You know, it's funny. So this past weekend, I've been kind of critical of Pete Carroll last 2 years. I've said, listen, I know we all love Richard Sherman and Marshawn Lynch and Pete Carroll, but I feel like by year two, this was really Russell Wilson's team. But Pete's a defensive guy, old school guy, little reluctant to take the reins off. I honestly felt this weekend, it was the first time that Pete said, from the first play, go. 9 for 9 first quarter. So go back to your career. Belichick was a defensive guy. Parcells, defensive guy. Pete Carroll, defensive guy. Drew, you know this. You've lived in this world where, hey, Drew, don't lose the game. I felt Pete Carroll this weekend turn the page a little. Take me to what's that like being a quarterback with a defensive coach.
Yeah, it's not ideal. I never did have an offensive head coach, which, you know, that would have been kind of cool to have a guy that just, you know, builds around the offense first rather than the defense. But ultimately, what it comes down to is every coach ultimately wants one thing. They want to win. And you know, with, for me in my second year with Parcells, we led the league in pass attempts with Bill Parcells. You know, we had one game, we threw it 70 times in one game.
Wow.
You know, it was, you know, he took the reins off when I was in my second year, because that was ultimately what we needed to do to win. We were giving up some points on defense and, weren't running the ball great. So we would come out and just throw it around. I also threw a few interceptions that year, which contributed to some close games, but, you know, with Pete, you know, Pete's a smart guy. He's a great football coach, Hall of Fame football coach. You know, and at some point you've got to realize what you have in Russell Wilson, which is one of the all-time great quarterbacks. And the other thing that's unique about Russ that should give Pete some comfort is that he doesn't make very many mistakes. He really doesn't turn the ball over. So that's always the risk that defensive coaches point to, is if you throw it a bunch, you know, you're going to turn the ball over. Well, Russ doesn't really turn the ball over very often. And so you can take the reins off him a little bit without having a huge risk attached to that.
Couple of minutes left. OBJ, another bad Sunday. I've said this for about a year. It feels like Baker's forcing it. And I do think sometimes with a veteran star receiver, a young quarterback feels like he's got to feed him. He's got to take care of him. How long would you let OBJ and Baker work before you finally said, you know what, I can get something for OBJ? How long do you let it cook?
Yeah, you know, there can be that motivation to try to force the ball to a guy that, that you know, that has a pedigree and has been around for a while. And I do get that sense a little bit that they're trying to a little bit too hard to get the ball to one guy rather than just letting the offense come to him. You know, their coordinator up there is Alex Van Pelt, who is my backup in Buffalo. He's a great guy. I love him to death. And Alex is a really no-nonsense guy. And I think if that is truly a problem, I would expect Alex to address that as an offensive coordinator first and foremost. And then if somehow that doesn't get solved, then maybe you look at doing something. But you know, it's one game against, you know, arguably the best defense in the entire NFL. So, you know, probably don't need to jump the gun on, sending a guy packing based on one game. But if it becomes a problem through the course of the season, I could see something happening.
Doubleback.com, great winery. Drew Bledsoe is in the mountains. He looks rustic. He looks experienced. It's like if a grizzly bear ran into your picture right now, you would wrestle it to the ground and save your small community, wouldn't you? That's just what you look like right now.
I absolutely would, yeah. Well, the grizzly bears, they're scared already, so they don't even come around anymore. I choked one of them out, and then I sent him back into the wild to go tell his friends, so they don't even come around here anymore.
Drew Bledsoe, double back, great guy. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Colin.
You bet. 14 NFL seasons. Yeah, I mean, I think even Drew kind of noted, it does feel like it's just a little bit of a forced job with OBJ. Now, that said, I've never given a blazing 5 pick on Thursday. I like Cleveland a lot Thursday. Like, it's my favorite pick of the week. My favorite pick of the week is Cleveland because, I have this theory. I've told you this, Joy. If you take a talented team and they get humiliated in the NFL, this is not college. Sometimes a team gets humiliated because they stink.
Right.
Cleveland doesn't stink. Always, the first thing I look for every week, find the talented team that was embarrassed on television. They almost always bounce back. So I think Cincinnati this morning feels pretty good about themselves. I mean, we lost, but it was close. Cleveland's ticked off. Cleveland is ticked off. I'm going to give you a blazing 5 pick. I already bet it, by the way. So I like what the Fox bet number is what now? It started at like 6, 6.5. I already bet Cleveland. It's my best bet of the week. So it's going to be in my blazing. Maybe I'll do a blazing 6. When it comes to reaching health goals, about changing mindset and habits, all about Noom empowers you, tools that change you, tools that change your habits, not necessarily your lifestyle. Get started today, free trial, noom.com/herd, noom.com/herd. Hour 3 next.